Greetings to the brightest audience in the country, and welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I am Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Hello, Fred. And not only that, you are also the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society.
That's correct. However, today we're going to report on articles from another organization, Creation Ministries International.
Is that allowed?
It's allowed.
It's allowed, right? We're all Christians. We all love the Lord.
That's right. They recently were spun off from Answers in Genesis. Mm-hmm. They're based in Australia, and they have a prestigious publication called the Journal of Creation. And we're going to discuss their latest edition of 2006, Volume 20, Number 3. Now, this journal is peer-reviewed, and most of the articles are submitted by scientists, but many of the articles are for the layman as well. It's a great journal. There's all kinds of articles in it. We're going to cover quite a range of articles today.
And not only that, we'll do a couple shows out of this one issue because it's packed with so much fascinating information about creation and evolution, the global flood. So where do we begin?
Okay, the first article we can start with is one by Michael Ord, and it's called The Heart Mountain Catastrophic Slide.
All right.
And so basically what this was an event over 424 square miles where a large carbonate rock was broken into 50 large pieces that ended up covering about 1,350 square miles. And this is an area on the edge of Yellowstone Park.
Okay, so somewhere up near Yellowstone, there was a huge mountain. How big? 424
square miles.
A big chunk of rock. And it's carbonate rock.
That's right.
And it was thick. It says it's about 1,600 feet thick. And then that big 400 square mile chunk of rock, a mountain, broke into pieces.
That's right. 50 large pieces, and it covered about four times the amount of square miles, 1,350 square miles.
Whoa. So now there are two views of the world and geology. One is the biblical view. The other is the secular view. The secular view is uniformitarianism, that the processes that are at work today explain the past.
That's right.
That's that view.
That's the common view, even though some of that's changing somewhat.
It's changing because the processes at work today do not explain the past.
That's right. Evidence continues to mount that a lot of things we observe happened catastrophically. In fact, in this article, they mentioned that the latest opinion on this Heart Mountain slide was catastrophic, taking only 30 minutes.
30 minutes. Now, if we were told that, well, geologically speaking, things happen very slowly, usually, of course, there's volcanic eruptions, and that's rather dramatic. But things happen very slowly, plate tectonics. Things move a quarter of an inch per year. They move gradually over a million years. One chunk of this mountain, the McCullough Peaks, ended up 55 miles away from its breakpoint. 55 miles away. And these are massive chunks, 1,600 feet thick. And this is in the journal. This is an evolutionary journal called Geology in the year 2006, this past year, and they said, well, there's been a lot of debate. They call this the Heart Mountain Catastrophic Slide. How long did this take for this one mountain to break into all these pieces? You know, how many millions of years? Now they're saying, well, the evidence is pretty strong. Yeah, it took about 30 minutes.
Yeah, the standard paradigm is millions of years, but the evidence and the physics behind it is just overwhelming. And so now they're admitting that this thing probably took 30 minutes or happened very rapidly. And what these people call themselves are neo-catastrophists. They admit there's all kinds of catastrophes around the Earth that explain what we see, but they don't want to admit to a global flood for the obvious implications.
Yeah, and so the godless worldview cannot explain the moon, let alone the galaxy and the universe. And when we go to explain the surface of the Earth, the geological features, if you deny the historic reality that there was a global flood that completely put into turmoil the surface of the Earth, and then it resettled after that flood, then you can't understand massive features about the surface of the Earth.
That's right. And this article goes on to touch on the topic of Specimen Ridge up in Yellowstone. I think, Bob, you said that you visited there recently.
Yes. We've been there a number of times.
And evolutionists have long taught that this Specimen Ridge was 40 forests buried over millions of years.
Oh, different forests?
That's right.
And so there's
a, apparently there's a sign at Yellowstone that proclaimed this evolutionary process that you're witnessing, or you're looking at a petrified forest, really 40 forests buried over time. But then Mount St. Helens erupted and did something very similar in Spirit Lake and buried all these trees upright.
Upright.
And did it rapidly. And so many evolutionists started coming around. Again, they're the neocatastrophists and admitted that Specimen Ridge was probably laid down rapidly in some kind of watery event.
Well, the evolutionist looked at the petrified trees in Yellowstone in this one area, and they said each tree, all these trees are settled in different layers, and every different strata was a different geologic period where a forest grew all on the same hillside area. And then that forest got wiped out, but it left a few trees, which petrified. And then it happened again and again, dozens of times over on this one, in this one area. And so what they did not tell the public is that these trees that have supposedly been standing there for millions of years, that they were petrified, but they had no roots. All their roots were abruptly broken off within a foot, 2-3 feet from the base of the tree. They were broken off. So what we know is that they were broke. These trees were broke down in a catastrophic event like a flood. They floated. They got waterlogged. They began to sink, and they sink with their trunk first, because that's how trees sink, we know, from Mount St. Helens. And so they were all laid down for the result of this flood as the layers were settling out from the flood, and then the trees settled layer by layer. That's how it happened. And that sign is gone now.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
Yeah.
Now, Bob, have you heard of Ronald Numbers?
Ronald Numbers.
He's a somewhat renowned atheist.
Yeah.
And here's, I have a quote from him regarding the Specimen Ridge.
All right.
He said, "I vividly remember the evening I attended an illustrated lecture on the famous sequence of fossil forests in Yellowstone National Park, and then stayed up most of the night agonizing over, then accepting this disturbing likelihood that the Earth was at least 30,000 years old." And this is back in the 40s.
Right.
"Having thus decided to follow science rather than scripture on the subject of origins, I quickly, though not painlessly, slid down the proverbial slippery slope toward unbelief." His slippery slope was a Specimen Ridge that we found out 30 years later was, the evidence supports it being laid down rapidly, not over the hundreds of thousands of years that evolutionists were telling him.
And just imagine if they would not have purposely withheld the truth that these trees were telling you this is where they grew. They're still standing where they grew, except that they have no roots. All their roots are broken off abruptly. If they would have told him that and millions of other visitors, that would have been less deception that they could have then calculated their worldview.
That's right. It's an attack on the truth of Genesis.
Yeah, and Fred, let me tell you this. One of the longtime dear friends of Bob and Yurt Live, you know, we've been on the air for 15 years and from Honolulu to Orlando, Florida for some of that time. And there's a park ranger at Haleakala National Park on Maui, the volcano. What a beautiful park. And he's a longtime friend of Bob and Yurt Live. And he saw the Mount St. Helens video from ICR that we aired. That's Dr. Stephen Austin, geologist. And he explained how these trees end up sinking trunk first. He's got video of it happening at Spirit Lake after Mount St. Helens. And so that park ranger from Hawaii began to interact with the park ranger at Yellowstone. And, you know, he's inside the system. And one of the things he said was, "This sign has got to go. This sign is false. This is not true. We are now deceiving people, and the sign is down."
That's great.
Isn't that cool?
That is.
Yeah, so there were many creationists involved in that battle, but here at Bob and Yurt Live, we had our little part in it. That was pretty exciting. All right. Next, where do we go next? Let's page through this publication. It's called the Journal of Creation. Whoa, what an article. What are we going to talk about
next? The next one is the Lucy Child.
Lucy.
So I'm sure many of you in the listening audience have heard of Lucy, the supposed ape-like man.
Right.
You know, that,
a hominid.
Exactly. Evolutionists always trying to turn monkeys into men.
That's
right. And here's
right.
another example.
That's right. And what actually ends up happening is that men are turned into monkeys for believing this stuff.
Exactly.
Because over and over and over, it turns out, well, upon further research, and then they have to retract so much of their claims. And so a lot has come out about Lucy. And it turns out that Lucy is not the upright walking, hopefully speaking, you know, like a human kind of morphology in her bone structure to let her speak like human beings. Turns out that stuff's just not true.
Yeah, the evidence has accumulated over the years that she had a stoop gait, curved fingers and toes, knuckle walker, and lived in trees. And here now they find Lucy's child, and they find even more evidence because this is a pretty good specimen they found.
So For example, is a baby Lucy. Lucy is what they call Australopithecus.
Yes.
And so they found a baby Lucy. We could call her Lulu, I guess. So they found a Lulu, and they found other also of the same species of monkey. They stand a little over 3 feet tall, and they're chimps. They have curved.
Yeah, we think it's probably an extinct type of pygmy chimpanzee or bonobo.
Yeah.
And but, for example, on this Lucy child, they found a complete hyoid bone, which is associated with the larynx.
Larynx is how we speak.
Oh, yes. And it was found, which was utterly chimp-like. No evidence there was any speech capacity, as some had hoped.
Yeah, and they were right. The evolutionists were hoping that, well, we didn't find this bone, but when we do, you know, it'll probably be more evidence that she began to evolve into humans and could walk upright and could speak. And so that turns out not to be true. Other impressions, when they took the skulls of Australopithecus, and they make impressions of them, and they study them in great detail. And they say, look at these patterns right here. These patterns, this indicates that Lucy is really morphing into a human being eventually. And so they do more research, and they turn out to indicate that the same patterns in Lucy's skull are also found in living apes, too. And, by the way, they're not used for linguistic purposes. They're just used for monkey purposes.
Exactly.
They've also said that Lucy's brain size was an indication that she was on her path to mankind. But now it turns out that adjusted for body size, the brain was not significantly larger than a normal ape's. So that turns out to be not true. A few other bullets here. The one complete finger bone is curved, so they got one complete
finger bone. That's right, whereas on the original Lucy, they had a partial finger bone. So they speculated, you know, that it was more human-like.
Right, so it turns out the one complete finger bone they have is curved like that of a chimp, and curved fingers are designed for swinging in trees. That's what they're used for. And the shoulder blade is gorilla-like, designed for tree climbing and knuckle walking, not for an upright gait.
It all confirms what they had already pretty much ascertained over the last 20 years looking at the original Lucy.
Mm-hmm. And finally, the organ of balance, you know, in our inner ear, that has been tested, and that's just extraordinary. This stuff has been done by evolutionists, this research, and the inner ear is shown to be the kind of inner ear for a chimp, not for humans that habitually walk upright. So, I mean, every way you look at Lucy, Lucy was a monkey.
That's right. And, you know, just to give you an example of how far evolutionists will go with this, a professor, Betsy Schumann, she was asked about the statue's feet of Lucy in St. Louis Museum because the statue's feet of Lucy are human-like.
They look almost human.
But yet all the evidence shows that they were chimp-like. And they had
no bones, right?
Yeah.
Lucy's,
yeah.
They end like around by her knees and her.
But when they found other Australopithecus afarensis, which is Lucy, they do have foot bones now, and they resemble pygmy chimpanzee feet. And so when she is asked about this, she said the feet probably are not accurate. But when she was asked whether the statue should be changed, she said, absolutely not. In other words, evolution has to use bad science to deceive people.
Right.
She knows that the feet are incorrect.
Yeah,
but
the feet are
she doesn't
probably
want to change them.
They're probably not accurate. When I said it went down to the knee, it went further down than the knees. I'm trying to picture.
Yeah, the original Lucy didn't have
skeleton,
the feet. Yeah.
But it was missing the feet. And yeah, well, no, we definitely shouldn't change this science exhibit because it's distorted in our direction. And that's what we do in order to convince people that Lucy was evolving into a human being.
Exactly.
Right.
And that kind of illusion is powerful on the kids and people that walk through that museum and see that. Mm-hmm. It really is sad.
All right. Well, the next article I'd love for us to talk about in this edition of Real Science Friday is about viruses, the biological view of viruses, creation versus evolution. Fred, viruses make people sick, and if God created, as the Bible claims, as I believe, you believe, then why are there viruses that help to make people sick and even die?
Yeah, evolutionists love to bring that up and say, you know, what kind of creator would create something like that that's destructive? Well, this article talks about viruses actually having a benefit, and we've learned this scientifically that, for example, they've been using viruses in clinical trials as powerful anti-cancer agents.
Mm.
So
they call them oncolytic viruses.
Yes.
That is, they're cancer killers.
So just like bacteria was created beneficial in the beginning, we still have the vast majority of bacteria in our body is beneficial. It's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, it helps and the viruses, digestion, for example.
Exactly, and viruses were the same way. It was a symbiotic relationship that was beneficial for both organisms, and God created it that way, and it was a great balance. Now, these viruses, we know from their structure that they mutate a lot easier. It's because they don't have the same proofreading and error checking as our nuclear DNA has. Mm. And so over time, because of the fall of creation and as things have deteriorated, viruses are more susceptible to breaking down. And the scientific evidence shows, and they outline this in the article, that typically when you lose information, when they mutate, they become either functionless or, in some rare cases, they become dangerous, as we have discovered over
right.
the years.
Sure. And they give a list here of the oncolytic viruses, the viruses that attack cancer cells. So God made the world, Adam and Eve, in a paradise, and he warned Adam and Eve, "Don't disobey me. If you do, then you will die. Sin, disease, and death entered into the human race, in fact, into the cosmos, when Adam and Eve rebelled against God." Because you can't give people who are evil millions of dollars and a full retirement, and you don't have to work, because then they only get more evil. They get more evil. So God gave us a paradise that we could have enjoyed forever if we didn't rebel. But once we rebelled, not only did our bodies begin to break down, the whole creation broke. It broke. And so thorns and thistles came up, and men had to struggle to provide for their families. And part of this was that God designed us such that if disease and death entered in, our body would still have an immune system, and it would still fight off disease. And the immune system is so wildly complex. With all our knowledge, we're only beginning to grasp how awesome it is.
Oh, yes. It's highly complex to think that that evolved by chance over millions of years.
It's just so
fairy tale.
It's just so bizarre how awesome it is how God made us. But it turns out that these viruses that we're rather familiar with, like the measles virus, polio virus, herpes, simplex virus, these different viruses, they actually are oncolytic in that they're cancer-killing viruses. They have a preferential interest in cancer cells, and they go after cancer cells. And so today, genetic engineered efforts to fight cancer are actually using viruses to specifically target cancer cells. They put some kind of a hopeful cure, a molecular cure. They attach it to a virus, and they inject it into someone's body, and the virus brings that molecular cure into the cancer cells.
Yeah, it's a real interesting branch of science now that's looking into this. But more evidence that explains, you know, where viruses came from, that they weren't created bad and destructive.
That's right. And so, of course, we hear about viruses mutating, and creationists agree. In fact, we assert from the beginning of our understanding of our worldview that things break down because of the fall. Things break down. It's called entropy. And so we know that there are mutations. Mutations are not evolution. Evolutionists at all levels try to say that disease is proof of evolution.
Oh, it's amazing how you have even scientists, PhDs, have told me that cancer is an example of evolution.
Yeah, they're desperate.
Unbelievable.
Because they don't seem to be able to comprehend the two competing worldviews. There's the evolution worldview and the creation worldview. And both worldviews agree that things break down. So they can't use the fact that things break down to prove their worldview. But they can't think at that level. It's as though that is too complex
for
them.
They can't accept that. Mutations cause loss of genetic information. deterioration. Mm-hmm. Just like if you had a mutation in your computer program, a bit that got flipped the wrong way, well, your program, if it's in the wrong place, it may not work at all. Or you might have a piece of your screen that doesn't look quite right if it's a not quite so harmful mutation. Mm-hmm. But mutations break down. They do not build up. There's no way you can have a mutation and then have natural selection come along and somehow guide it to some
The information is lost.
It's lost.
And so as they've been studying viruses now for so long, it turns out that when viruses mutate, they break down, they lose information, they're not as efficient as they were, but that might help them avoid some type of an antiviral treatment. Because now the shape of the virus is a little different, and so the shape of the treatment doesn't quite grab onto it as well. And so they mutate, and now the old treatment doesn't work, but it's not that they got better, they broke. Now we have to fight them in a different way. And it turns out that viruses, with all the mutations from viruses, there's no indication of a virus ever mutating into a single-celled organism. In fact, no virus has ever mutated into a different family of viruses.
That's right.
They're all the known families.
Which is common. We don't have any examples of anything mutating from one kind to another.
Right. Because God created them after their kinds. And evolutionists think, they really think that evolution is the foundation of all science and progress. And one of your favorite questions, Fred, what's one of your questions you like to ask an evolutionist about that topic?
To give me one example where evolution produced anything useful for mankind, and not some silly thing like, well, it showed us how men evolved. You know,
right,
something,
right.
Some useful invention.
Some either further discoveries or inventions that now are known or exist because of Darwinism. And if you think of other scientific discoveries and insights, like let's say the nature of light. Wow, once we begin, we still don't understand light, but we're getting there. We understand more than we did in Isaac Newton's day. And so once we begin to understand light and all the information that's in light and how it works, then we begin to look at the stars. We know what they're made of, what they're burning. We create fiber optic lines to go under oceans to transmit data. There are literally thousands of discoveries and inventions because we got an insight into light. And how about gravity? The same thing with gravity. The things we have discovered, and we don't fully understand gravity, but thousands of inventions and discoveries because now we have the concept of how gravity functions, even though we might debate or not be sure what it really is. How about evolution? Okay, so species evolved from molecules to man. What inventions, what discoveries now have we made by that great, brilliant insight?
And when asked that question, evolutionists come up with nothing, and I've been asking it for a long time. Whereas scientists often, they'll look at creation and they'll see a really cool design and then they'll try to emulate it. And we have all kinds of examples of that. For example, NASA has been studying flying squirrels for a long time and to try to work that design into their aircraft and whatnot.
Right.
Same thing with, I think, the trilobite's eyes. They studied that for their telescopes. I mean, they look at God's creation and they realize, hey, this is an ingenuity beyond our capacity, and they try to emulate it.
It's going on right now with automotive engineers looking at the boxfish of all things. And they take from nature the most brilliant designs that, with all of our ego and pride and our technological sophistication, we can't cut it. We can't do what is in the simplest insect.
You were talking about the boxfish, and I'm wondering if they're using that design for cars. You know, the boxfish, when it gets really scared, it emits a poison, and it can kill anything in its vicinity. I was wondering if we can do the same thing with road rage, you know, cars.
Yeah, right. Have a boxfish button on our dashboard. Okay, so now let's continue.
There was one real quick article on the Big Bang failing yet another test.
Oh, yeah, by John Hartnett. Now, do you know that author, John Hartnett? I think he's an astrophysicist.
Yes, he's published in both this journal and the CRSQ.
CRS, Creation Research Society Quarterly, and we are now going through the Journal of Creation by Creation Ministries International. And by the way, you can find them on the web at creationontheweb.com. That's pretty simple, creationontheweb.com. So this article, The Big Bang Fails another test. The Big Bang is the hope of millions upon millions of atheists that they have figured out how the universe got here. The Big Bang is a complete contradiction. Its fundamental concepts contradict the known laws of science. It is broken. And when something is true, no matter where you look at it from, it fits in. When something is false, no matter what you look at, it doesn't work. And so what's this article about?
Well, you know, NASA has had this project called WMAP, and this whole thing was designed specifically to detect, to prove the Big Bang, to look for evidence for the Big Bang and detect signature echoes of the Big Bang.
So if the Big Bang happened, we should be able to listen up in the sky and see the echo of the Big Bang, and that's what they call the CMB, Cosmic Microwave Background Radiation of the Universe. And so they say, well, there should be shadows of that echo formed by nearby galaxies and galaxy clusters. So when there are galaxies close to the Milky Way, the Big Bang, it should come to us, that echo, but there should be shadows around these galaxy clusters. What have they found so far?
Well, when they did their analysis, they looked at 31 clusters, and of all of those, they found no shadow at all. So this is pretty damaging.
They
predicted to find shadows. They didn't find any, so yet another failed prediction for the Big Bang.
They averaged their result over 31 clusters. And again, this stuff is reported in secular, evolutionary, godless science journals. And so they have found, in fact, there's a summary here, either the microwave background isn't coming from behind the clusters, which means the Big Bang is blown away, or there is something else going on.
Yeah, that's what one of the NASA scientists said. He said,
yeah,
he's basically saying the evidence shows that the Big Bang is blown away, but, you know, maybe there's something else going on. Well, no, you keep finding evidence against the Big Bang, just accept it.
Right, exactly. And that was Dr. Richard Liu, who used data from NASA's WMAP project. He's actually with the University of Alabama at Huntsville, and that's where NASA has their big operation in Huntsville down there. So, Fred Williams, we're about out of time. Could we continue this and air on another program, another episode of Real Science Friday?
Definitely.
This is exciting. So I want to let people know that within the next 7 days from this show, if you order the BEL Science Pack from us of 5 great resources about creation, evolution, and the worldwide flood, or if you sign up for any of our BEL subscription services, like the TV show, the classics, the sermons, etc., we will give you a subscription to this fabulous Journal of Creation. So that's a gift subscription to the Journal of Creation. It comes out of Australia, but it has scientists from all over the world participating. It's a peer-reviewed journal, like Fred Williams said. So, by the way, we're still in our telethon, so if you can help us, boy, we'd be thrilled to meet our goal of $25,000. And so you get a double whammy here. If you subscribe, your subscription will be doubled by one of the Denver surgeons who gave a matching fund. And you will get this Journal of Creation as a free gift. Fred Williams, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, that was enjoyable. Look forward to the next show here on Bob and Art Live at Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. What a great school that is, Maranatha. May God bless you.